With another edition of the Stampede Wrestling Show.
And indeed, away we go as always. Welcome in to Heartbeat Radio with Bruce Hart here on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio on blogtalkradio.com. I'm Patrick. I'm the one that only has to do the intros. And you won't hear me too much tonight. However, joining us as always is Bruce Hart. Bruce, how are you this evening?
I'm really good. I'm delighted that we got some great guests tonight, including a guy I've admired and heard nothing but great things about for many years, and I just had a chance to meet him, Larry Matisic. So I'm really thrilled to have him on the show and looking forward to just sharing perspectives and hearing some of the stories and insights about the legendary St. Louis wrestling promotion, which back in the day under the tutelage of Sam Muchnick and those guys was like the cornerstone of the National Wrestling Alliance, you know. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm also told that we have another legendary guest, Baron von Raschke. So another guy I have high regard for.
But yes, indeed, as you mentioned, we'll have the Clawmaster himself, Baron von Raschke, joining us probably in about 15, 20 minutes. But currently joining us, as you mentioned, a writer, someone who's very highly regarded, and will be accepting the Jim Melby Award for Excellence in Wrestling Journalism at the upcoming Waterloo Hall of Fame ceremony coming up next weekend, and that would be Larry Matisic. How are you this evening, Larry?
I'm doing fine and really pleased and honored that you guys had me on, because certainly the Hart family, you talk about St. Louis being a cornerstone of wrestling, of the National Wrestling Alliance. Well, the Hart family is a cornerstone of wrestling. And when I started working for Sam Muchnick, oh, golly, I was 16 years old. I was calling in results. I was doing a Gophers and everything job for him. But I learned so much about it from Sam, and I learned much about wrestling. And one of the names that always came up was Stu Hart, and telling me stories about what happened up in Canada. And Bruce and I talked briefly before we went on air, and we had a mutual friend by the name of Joe Milich, a short little bald guy who spent a lot of time training up there with your pop, if I'm not mistaken, right, Bruce?
Very much so, yeah. He was one of those guys, I guess they referred to back in the day as carpenters, you know, so they're the type of guys who worked mid-card and were kind of entrusted with getting the up-and-coming stars over. He was sort of a veteran then, and I remember my dad always, you know, speaking very highly of Joe, and when I was a kid, he was, you know, around the house quite a bit, and I was really fascinated just to be you know, kind of listening to some of the dialogue between guys like Joe Milich and my dad, and guys like Luther Lindsay and George Gordienko, and some of those guys that always seemed to be around the house, even old Sam Menneker and some of those guys. And it was always fascinating just to hear them talking about the wrestling business and the workers and the and all those things, you know. So it made a huge impression on me, and I was kind of, when you mentioned the name, I was like, wow, that's a blast from the past. But my dad seemed to have a fair number, and now that I think of it, of guys that sort of had a relationship with Missouri and that St. Louis and that Kansas City office. You know, I remember another guy that I mentioned to you was Ray Gordon, who was a good friend of Pat O'Connor. I guess they're both from New Zealand. And I remember Pat was up here quite a bit. And those guys all, as I mentioned before, seemed to have very legitimate amateur best wrestling backgrounds, which it seemed funny. That was sort of part of the equation up here. I know when my dad was tutoring guys down in the dungeon and all that type of thing, there seemed to be an emphasis on some legitimate amateur background. And I remember a lot of the guys that came out of here, well, they kind of broke in up here. Even some of them, I'm sure, worked a lot in the St. Louis office, guys like Wilbur Snyder and Joe Blanchard.
Oh, yeah. Yes, terrific performers.
Gene Kaniski and Luther and some of them, and they were all sort of well-schooled in the gym before they got into the ring, and that seemed to be part of the dynamic up here, the pretty legitimate amateur, you know, and I think that's one of the things that should still be one of the criteria for being in the business these days. I see some of the guys, I think, have some obvious pretty legit backgrounds, maybe like Kurt Angle, although he's not even in WWE anymore, and maybe Brock when he makes his annual appearance or whatever, but not that many.
Real quick, sorry to interrupt you, Bruce, but I want to make sure that we get our next guest introduced. Joining us now is one of the main people behind the Waterloo Hall of Fame, and I know, Larry, this is probably somebody that you're going to meet come next weekend in Troy Peterson, so I just wanted to make sure to get him involved. Troy, how are you tonight?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you. We're having a show right now at the Cedar County Fair, but it's great to be on here. It's an honor, so thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Troy. It's an honor to meet you, and as I was saying before, I'm a big proponent of the inclusion and interaction of amateur wrestling in pro, you know. And, Larry and I were just discussing some of the legendary guys that had come out of St. Louis and that area, which are in your Iowa Hall of Fame, and including Lou Thesz, who was probably the maybe the most respected or iconic, I think, NWA champion maybe ever. But they all seem to have a very solid and long-standing amateur background, and that was always one of the things that seemed to be one of the main considerations for my dad, and that was kind of part of the whole dungeon,
you know, Bruce, kind of thing.
Guys had to go in there and pay their dues. If nothing else, my dad wanted them to, learn what amateur wrestling was and gain some respect for the business and maybe some respect for themselves.
When you mentioned Joe Milich, when I was growing up and starting to work with Sam Mushing, when I was in high school getting into the college days and I got to know Joe, one of the things I found out about Joe was when young athletes who thought they wanted to be wrestlers got the chance to see if they could be wrestlers, Sam Mushnick would usually make arrangements for them to go over to the YMCA on the mats with Joe Milich, and Joe would take them in there and he would pull necks. You've probably heard that term plenty of times up there.
Yeah,
and
I heard the term pulling necks. Sometimes they called it bullying or whatever, you know.
And we found out if they ever come back or not. And, of course, the other guy we had up here who sometimes got involved in helping a little bit, not that much, was more Joe in the early part of it, was also Wild Bill Longson, who was Sam Mushnick's partner. And of course, the name that I remember the most, because he was closer to my age, and he unfortunately passed away in a plane crash very young, way too young, and that's Bobby Shane. And he was trained by Joe Milich and Wild Bill Longson.
Yeah, those were iconic names. You know, it's funny, you'd hear it back in the day. Even a lot of the promoters had pretty good amateur backgrounds. Another guy who was in that neck of the woods was Bob Geigel, who was pretty respected amateur back in the day at Iowa, I believe, and then Ray Gunkel and Dory Funk Sr. out of Purdue, I believe, and then there was guys like old Gene LaBelle out in California, and there seemed to be always a few policemen in Burns territory, from what my dad told me, old Butch Lebby and Pazendak and some of those guys, and my dad was sort of big on that up here, you know, and it seemed like they used to have these so-called policemen. I remember hearing guys' names like Ruffy Silverstein and Big Bill Miller and stuff like that. But in its own way, I think it, you know, was good for the business. And most of those guys, I might add, are I never perceived any of them to be bullies. You know, they weren't just liberty takers or anything like that. But they, I think a big part of their kind of MO was just ensuring that there was some dues paying and respect for the business and some propriety maybe to the business. So when you got in, you looked the part, and you also sort of, you know, manifested it. You know, I remember when I was a kid, I used to see all the wrestlers at the house, and it's funny, it sounds funny in this day and age, but even when they're coming up to the house to get their payoffs, they're always wearing a suit and all that stuff.
Yep,
you know.
Yep.
And they'd always walk into the arenas, you know, wearing a suit and looking like they belonged, you know. And,
like a professional athlete.
I don't see that now. Most of the guys are wearing sweatpants and blue jeans and tank tops and stuff, even the WWE guys, you know. So I don't know. It's kind of funny from my perspective, you know. But
yeah, we still try to stress, hey, let's look your best. You know, why not? You know, why not look your best and present yourself as a superstar and somebody that's, you know, got their stuff together. You know, it's wear a
yeah.
suit.
Yeah, it all seems to be like that. I remember all the guys back in the day seemed to drive Cadillacs, or they, you know, they had a certain air about them. And I remember whenever the NWA champions came up here, they always it was all, almost part of it. You know, either Dory or Harley or Kaniski or Lou or whatever, they'd always be wearing suits, and they always look like they you know, fit the role type thing, you know. That's
right.
Part of it, too.
Yeah, you mean in St. Louis, we were just fortunate that way because as far as Sam was concerned, this was a professional sport, and he wanted to be treated that way. And if it's going to be treated that way, you have to act that way. And even a young kid, a Ted DiBiase or somebody come up here, they learned that very quickly. It's going to be different. And the way Sam handled his business was different. Now, Sam never wrestled, of course. He was a sports writer. He's a baseball writer before he got into wrestling. But he loved wrestling. He grew up in the in a gym here in St. Louis playing handball with Lou Fez and Ray Steele. That's how he got into wrestling with those guys. And Tom Pax hired him eventually. So he became buddies with them. But he understood that by getting the respect for your performers, for your wrestlers, you would get the respect of the public and you would get the respect of the business community, and that way you would be taken a little bit different level than most sports were, than wrestling was in a lot of different towns. And in St. Louis, I can't believe now I look back at it and I can't believe how lucky I was. It was just different here. I mean, everything was just so different. And every now and then Sam would send me, let me go somewhere to do some television for somebody after I started doing wrestling at the Chase here in St. Louis. And I come back and I kind of be shaking my head, and Sam would say, I knew you wouldn't like it, but you had to see that some places are different than here. And he was right. And that was a lot of what was different. It was how we treated ourselves and how we treated ourselves, how the wrestlers, are the television announcers, are the referees, how you treated yourself and how you looked, that made a difference in how the public treated you.
Yeah. I always heard nothing but good things. That was one of those, back in the day in the 70s and 60s, there was about three or four places that all the wrestlers aspired to go to, if only even once. One of them was St. Louis, you know. It was like the Kiel Auditorium or whatever. It was kind of like, you know, going to Yankee Stadium or some iconic place, you know. And it was a real feather in your hat. I remember to even be on the card there, even if you were in the opening match or whatever on one of those Kiel cards. I remember a lot of the guys breaking in up here were kind of always talking, you know, kind of wide-eyed, like I'd love to be able to go to the Kiel Auditorium sometime or Madison Square Garden, and maybe Maple Leaf Gardens. There's a few places that had that iconic kind of, you know, aura about them. And St. Louis was one of them, you know, and everything I heard about him was good. You know, I used to hear from Dorian Harley and all like that, that like most of the finishes were in the middle. There was a minimum of the real, you know, gimmick and, you know, contrived nonsense. You know, you very rarely saw swerve finishes or a lot of the stuff that I see routinely nowadays on Raw or SmackDown. You know, I don't think there was much of that. You know, it was all part of that whole thing, you know, it was about respecting the business and that type of thing. And I think those were all things that have almost sort of been lost, unfortunately. You know, and that's one of the reasons why the business seems to be not as respected or whatever as it was back in those days, you know. And, but
okay,
yeah,
if,
yeah.
I was just going to
ask real quick. Okay.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask both Troy and Bruce this question. Don't you think it's ironic that Vince McMahon and WWE for many, many years wanted wrestling to be not a sport? It was entertainment. It's sports entertainment. It's not a sport. Until he found out that because of the way the television advertisers looked on sports, that all of a sudden it was better for wrestling to be a sport. And just in the last year, all of a sudden wrestling is now becoming more of a sport for Vince McMahon. I can remember Sam Muchnick back in, I guess this would have been mid-70s. A new general manager came into the TV station here in Channel 11, and he had to be smartened up to a certain extent and get used to the St. Louis way. And Sam was explaining to me why he did it. And he said, as long as they look at us as a sport, and we are a sport, he said, we'll be here forever. Baseball, football, hockey, wrestling, we're going to be here forever. He says, but if they look at us like the Westerns or variety shows, we're all going to get canceled someday. So let's let them look at us as a sport, and we should do everything we can do to encourage them to look at us as a sport. And that's the way he looked at it.
Yeah, and I think that's words of wisdom, you know, and I think that's one of the biggest mistakes Vince Jr. ever made, and I imagine, certainly for me, and I imagine you're the same, you know, I never really, take him the same way after that, you know, after the disclosure or whatever of it being a work or entertainment or whatever. And I could, you know, I've heard all kinds of supposed rationales and excuses for that, but none of them held any water. And I think he's, all he's ever done is make it that much harder for himself and the wrestlers. And I don't think the fans ever sought to know or wanted, I think they were more than happy, you know.
Very good point.
Believe in the they weren't seeking to know, and today they're still not seeking to know. But yeah, that's always kind of clouded my opinion of Vince Jr., you know, and that whole thing, you know. And it's still something that kind of they wear around their neck like an albatross. And I don't know whether they can ever, you know, kind of get rid of that stigma that they've kind of imposed on themselves.
They did it to themselves.
Real quick, just because I want to make sure that he gets as much time, and he's been waiting for a couple of minutes, I want to introduce our final major guest for this show, an absolute legend, former AWA Tag Team Champion, the Clawmaster himself, Baron Von Raschke. I want to make sure that I finally get him introduced. So, Baron, it's an absolute honor to have you on the show.
Wait a minute, I was just taking a nap.
Baron, great to hear your voice. I hope you're doing well, my friend.
Was that Larry Matisek talking?
Yes, that was, and I hope you're doing well. You're one of my great
favorites. Well, thank you for the nap. I enjoyed that a lot.
I can go longer if you want, then you can take a little bit longer nap.
It's an honor.
That'd be great.
And a pleasure, Baron. I've been a long-time admirer of yours, and I've known a lot of the guys from Minneapolis and some of the other territories you worked in. I've never heard anything but nice things and good things said about you, you know. So it's an honor, and I know my dad had a great deal of respect for you. He'd heard a lot about your amateur background from some of the guys that had been up here, like Iron Sheik and I think Billy Robinson and a guy named Larry Lane. They all spoke very highly of you. So in and out of the ring, they both said you were a great guy to have in the territory and a great amateur and a great pro too. So I'm honored and delighted that you saw fit to grace us with your presence.
Well, I'm happy to take part in this. Larry was doing such a great job. We hated to interrupt him. He was really helping defend what the business used to be, and you were too, and it was great to just sit back and listen to that. And I have many of the same feelings about pro wrestling now and pro wrestling then, but anyway, what are we doing here? I'm talking about the Wrestling Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa, coming up, or what?
Aren't you going to have something special done for you there, Baron? Aren't they going to have a little special award for you there, too, in the afternoon on Saturday, I think?
Yeah, I think they're bringing in a plastic surgeon. They're gonna try to make me look even more like George Clooney. I always have to wear a name tag down there. I'm not George Clooney. Everybody wants his autograph.
As long as you're not Rosemary Clooney, we'll be all right. So.
Hey, don't talk about my sister. First time they're talking about you.
We had the Baron here at a show in East Grindelet at the Gateway Grizzlies, a minor league baseball stadium, and I was amazed how many people came up to him and said, I thought they'd come up and say, are you Baron von Rosch? You know what? They all came up and said, are you George Clooney? Who are you dating now? Every one of them.
Sorry, girls, I'm taken. Okay.
Yeah, you know, and Baron mentions the Hall of Fame. You know, we do have a big weekend in Waterloo, Iowa. It's coming up. It's the George Stragos Luthez Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame.
Man, no one anybody on this show.
Yeah, thanks.
Is that Troy Peterson out here talking? Yakety yak. Go ahead.
Oh, man. He's probably going to hang up now. Now he knows I'm on here. But.
You should have never heard this fish. Go ahead.
And, nice. But, you know, we're doing a Mad Dog with Sean. We're doing a tribute award each year, and Baron is starting in 2014. So Baron's the first recipient of that, and we're going to be doing a roundtable discussion on the life and career of him on Saturday afternoon at the Dan Gable Museum. And
hey, Dean Martin used to call that a roast. They're going to burn me. I know I'm being set up. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's part of a big weekend, and you know, it's something that we've done something different a little bit each year, and this year we're really excited about it. And having Baron, even though he gives me a lot of grief throughout the weekend, he's an incredible person to have around, and none of it
undeserved, by the way.
Oh, absolutely, but. No, and so we invite everybody, you know, if you haven't checked it out, you should come down to the Dan Gable Museum sometime in Waterloo, Iowa. It's a great weekend. When, Larry Madison getting the Dan Miller Award. So
when and where exactly is that? In case any
it starts Thursday. It starts Thursday at seven p.m. or
this
6
upcoming
p.m. Sorry,
Thursday.
This upcoming Thursday, and it's Thursday, we're going to do a tribute to Mad Dog with Sean. And then Friday, I promote a wrestling company, Impact Pro Wrestling, and we're going to do an evaluation with Jerry Briscoe and Jim Ross on that Friday, July 18th at noon. And then we promote a evening show at 7 p.m. And then Saturday is a whole day of events. It's we'll do the roundtable discussion about Baron von Raschke. You have an autograph signing. There's a banquet. There's a...
That'll be your turn to take a nap.
Shower. Yes, my turn to take a nap, exactly. Perfect timing. So, and then the Hall of Fame inductions, and this year we have Rick and Scott Steiner. The museum, as you guys talked about earlier, stresses an amateur background, so Rick and Scott Steiner are this year's living inductees, and then Wilbur Snyder is the posthumous inductee, and then the award winners that we have Luthez Award, which is kind of given to somebody who's done good in the world outside of professional wrestling, and that's Larry Henning. And then we have a Frank Gotch Award, which is given to somebody who's brought awareness to professional wrestling through outside works, which is Diamond Dallas Page. And then we have the George Tragos Award, which is kind of basically given to a badass, pardon my French, which this year is going to be Randy Couture. So that's kind of the – and then the Jim Melby Award, of course, which I already stated was going to be given to Larry Matisic, who personally is an honor to talk to him right now. I read his Bruiser Brody book, who I was a huge fan of growing up as a kid, and it was a great, great book. So
thank you very much.
Whole weekend. Yeah, no, it was great.
July 17th, that's the date that he was murdered, by the way.
Well,
I just thought I'd add that sad moment in there, but we'll make people laugh. We'll Baron and I'll get them going, don't worry.
Well, that's a great lineup. I'd love to get down there. That sounds like it'll be great to just meet and shoot the bull, as they say, with some of those guys. You know, those are legends.
It is. It's a laid-back weekend. You know, Jim Ross will be there, Jerry Briscoe, Danny Hodge. You know, you guys talked a little bit earlier about guys with amateur credentials. I mean, there's nobody with better amateur credentials than Danny Hodge. And you know, it's just a great – and Dan Gable will be there. I mean, this is kind of the one weekend a year where he really loves and puts his support behind pro wrestling. You know, I mean, he's a good –
He was pretty good, too, you know, as an amateur.
Yeah, he was all right.
He was
right,
pretty good,
you know,
too, as an amateur, yeah.
Yeah, he's okay.
All right, never, you know, never gave up a point in the Olympics, never been done since. But, yeah, he's pretty good. No, so, you know, Dan Gable's there, and, of course, I said Randy Couture. So it's a great weekend. It's very laid back. It's fan-friendly, but it's certainly not a fan fest, and it's just a – it's a just hang out, you know. I just feel like it's really relaxed. It's something that Kyle Clinton's museums work really hard to create that atmosphere. So,
as long as the main thing on the menu is not potatoes, I hope.
And as long as Jerry Briscoe doesn't get mad at somebody and auction off their plaque, right?
Oh man, that was a. You know, I guess they say any press is good press, but that was something that year. So.
I love Jerry. Great guy. Actually,
yeah,
Baron, I want to throw this out to you because I'm sending a DVD there, and Herb Simmons will be there bringing this DVD. I've got it's almost going to be an hour's worth of tape of wrestlers who are in the Hall of Fame there, the Dan Hodge, Tragos Thez Hall of Fame, who wrestled in St. Louis, and maybe 2, 3, 4 minutes about each guy. So, of course, I have to have something of Baron Von Roschke there, and I decided we ought to put in part of his interviews. And you haven't lived until you saw Baron Von Roschke interview for a match with David Von Erich. When you guys see that interview with Roschke and David Von Erich, you'll love it.
Maybe well, they will. Maybe they won't.
Yeah, they will. They will. What's the
see what happens in the ring.
What's that thing? The umlada, glumglada? What did you describe it as? Where you put the claw and it gets me confused. That's why we had to put
the spell it. You spell it, I'll say it.
Oh, okay.
Medulla oblongata.
Ah, there we go.
Part of the brainstem.
There we go.
Leading to the inner core where all the pain registers. Pain. Now you're getting me excited.
That's good for you.
Yeah. Feel like I'm doing an autopsy. Arthur. Enough CSI.
Oh, Troy, you're going to have your hands full, buddy.
Well, absolutely. You know, yeah, that's kind of, you know, it always kind of keeps me on edge. So whenever Baron's around.
But that's good, though. Doesn't it mean something to, and I'm going to be serious here for a second, when some of the younger guys have heard these names, they see them, they kind of understand a little bit what wrestling can be. I don't know if some of the younger guys getting it really understand what you can do with this, what this business can be. As crazy, as nutty, as silly as this business can be sometimes, they don't realize how special it can be.
I tell you, one of the highlights we do this on the Impact Pro Wrestling show, we do a Legends Lumberjack match where guys like Baron and Roadwire Animal in the past and Dan Severn and, you know, all sorts of folks have been Danny Hodge, and you know, these guys are doing, you know, moves, you know, one after another, and they get a reaction, and it's a reaction, and it's a reaction from the crowd. And then Baron puts a claw on a guy, and that reaction is unlike, I mean, it's just a whole new level of, I mean, the crowd goes crazy. I mean, they're all on their feet, they go nuts, and I think it does. It sends a great message to the younger guys, like, hey, make it, you know, do less, mean it more, make it mean something, and have that in. But you have to have that it, you know, like a guy like Baron, or you know, there's a lot of guys that have it, but I mean, they're few and far between, but the people that we're talking about, the legends, have it. And when Baron does that claw, I mean, the crowd goes absolutely crazy. I think you're right. I think it does send a great message to guys that, hey, this can be something special, you know.
I think we should talk about some of the inductees or somebody besides that Baron guy. I'm getting nervous here.
We're being nice to you.
I mean,
sure now.
You know, you have you know, Rick and Scott Steiner. I mean, those two guys were, you know, they were kind of around in Michigan when I was growing up and a big amateur wrestling fan. And, I mean, they were intimidating. I mean, they were bad dudes. And so, and that's kind of, I think, you know, you guys can all speak more intelligently than I can, but I think that's carried with them in their professional wrestling career. They were all pretty respected, you know, both were pretty respected guys. And being tough guys, and so they're great choices, I think, to be inducted this year. So
I like Wilbur Snyder and that posthumous award because I grew up watching Wilbur Snyder here in St. Louis when I was a kid, back in 59, 60, 61, having those knockdown drag-out battles with Gene Kaniski, and then going in there and having a scientific match with Lou Thesz. I mean, they were just mind-boggling, and the one thing, I talked to somebody about Wilbur Snyder, and they said if you had to describe him in one word, what would it be? And, you know, the word is smooth. Everything Wilbur Snyder did was just so smooth, so good, so solid. He was in a level of his own, so I'm really happy to see Wilbur get it. And by the time I was working for Sam and going to school and everything, Wilbur was one of the guys, along with Big Bill Miller and Kaniski and Lou Thesz, who were kind enough to kind of help a young kid who really wasn't going to be a wrestler. He's going to be somebody in the office, but they were kind enough to teach me and to let me learn. And so I'm really happy that Wilbur Snyder is getting an award.
Yeah, great guy, Wilbur. I remember my dad told me way back in the early 50s, he had Wilbur and Kaniski were, they're both playing on the offensive line for the Edmonton Eskimos up here in up in Edmonton. And they kind of launched their careers from there. And I think Joe Blanchard was
yeah, Joe
also
Blanchard was there too, yeah.
on the O-line too with them. So it was kind of funny that they all evolved from that into, you know, they all seemed to go ascend to stardom really quick too. You know, they, within maybe a year or two of getting in the business, they were headlining in places like St. Louis and the big territories, you know, so they must have had a lot of charisma and just kind of a grasp of the wrestling business. But yeah, that's funny. Another guy that was a football player type who started up here that you mentioned was Von Erich. And I remember when I was a kid, he was living in my dad's backyard in a trailer, old Fritz. And he had been sort of, I think, at SMU with Doak Walker and that bunch in the late 40s, and I'm not sure if he had even taken the Nazi gimmick at that time, you know, but I think he was just evolving into it. I think my dad still referred to him as Jack Atkinson.
I think he was that phony guy, Jack Atkinson, back then.
Yep.
Never heard of him.
I was kind of amused just a while back when you were talking about the Baron and David Von Erich, saying two upstanding Americans being portrayed as Nazis, you know. And the fans, you know, it was kind of, I guess, the way the business was back in those days, you know. But it was kind of funny.
Yeah, I think, don't you think, Bruce, it was okay because they could back it up. It wasn't just a gimmick, and that was all they had. They had the ability to get in the ring and give you a match. They had the ability to tell you a story. They had the ability to do things that now they have to do with 15 run-ins and 5 referee bumps. They had the ability to do something more than just the gimmick. The gimmick was just icing on the cake.
Yeah, I remember so many of those guys, and almost all the guys I mentioned were, if you met them behind the scenes, they were the nicest guys and most upstanding guys. And I remember a few others like Kenji Shibuya and Bill Miller and them, and they all played villains. And if you ever saw them in the back, you know, they're always the most humble and nicest guys. I think the only exception to that may be Kaniski. He was a bit of a,
he
wasn't that much different than his in-ring personality, but probably not a bad guy, Gene, but he was always, you know, a bit verbose. But yeah, it's funny, all those guys, and I'm sure Baron's the same, you know. They all had these menacing characters, but I've heard nothing but good things about all those guys and every one of them.
Baron?
I met another guy was Larry Hennig, and he was up here when I was a kid wrestling as a Viking or something like that. And another really soft-spoken, nice guy, but in the ring he came across as pretty menacing, you know.
Right.
Man, it seems like someone's breaking up real bad.
I don't know if that's me or not.
That was me. I started to cry. That was such a good thing that Bruce was saying about all the old-timers.
Are you?
Oh, somebody
get hit by a train.
Somebody get off the track.
Because our Jones is here.
I'm not here. I'm trained.
I have a train running by here. You may be getting Folsom Prison Blues here.
Oh boy.
Is that true?
Since we have a small wall, I kind of wanted to ask, considering the fact that the Baron for so many years lived in the Republic of Germany, how do you feel about Germany winning the World Cup earlier today?
Well, I think it's a great accomplishment for the people of Germany, the soccer team, of course, because they're the ones that won it. But, yeah, I think it's a great accomplishment for them. I was still kind of hoping the USA would hang in there a little longer. I have a nephew that's married to a girl from Brazil, and I think they were rooting for Brazil most of this week until the
probably because Brazil had a better
two
chance.
Days ago. But you know, somebody's got to win, and they won. That's great.
Yeah.
And
you ever play soccer, Baron?
What?
Baron, did Baron ever play soccer?
I tried boxing once. Every time I tried to sock somebody, they'd sock me back, though. So
okay, that's what it was.
Yeah, that's no fun.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
No, I just did it for kicks. No, I played American-style football for the University of Nebraska and for North High School and whenever I could out on the playground. So I played a little bit of football, but no soccer.
Yeah, football was the game. And you had a pretty good team up there in Nebraska, too. In fact, I guess Monty Kiffin's not down in Dallas anymore. He left after last year, didn't he?
I don't know.
Teammate. I think he was the defensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys, but I think he left him after the end of last season. My mistake. I won't bring it up. They should have hired you, Baron.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Hey,
Monty did a great job for years and years. Anyway, what was this?
Yes.
Get in there, Troy.
Well, no, this is off topic, too. We're all over the place. But what do you guys think about it? You know, WWE's really trying to push through. I talked to Jerry Briscoe, and we do this evaluation each year at the Hall of Fame. And what do you think about the push about just bringing in natural athletes? Like Baron played D1 football and just showing, hey, you have a dedication to be at the highest level of one sport. It can translate to professional wrestling. I mean, what do you – three who are all very knowledgeable, obviously, about what it takes to make it professional wrestling. What do you guys think about that trend, or do you think it should come from a different source?
I think it's a great prerequisite to have some legitimate athletic background, you know, which was always sort of one of the emphasis up here in the dungeon. You know, he had guys that not only knew the business, but had some respect for it. And I always thought it enhanced their ability to work because they actually knew what they were endeavoring to simulate. But I don't know. I'd say it would be a step in the right direction, you know, as opposed to just bringing in guys because they're a friend of somebody or they got a roided up body or they're good at kissing somebody's sphincter, you know. So those would be my perspectives on that.
But do offer God out of you.
Yeah.
Get paid out on the radio?
I'm not sure if I'd love to use the word sphincter on the radio, you know, maybe hemorrhoid or something, you know, but...
Well, we're not on the radio. We're on the Internet, so use whatever language
geez,
you want.
You know,
I don't care.
Let the F-bombs flow then.
I can tell you from a promotion standpoint, if you got a guy...
I'm not doing any nude scenes, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's what I was just going to ask him. From the promotion standpoint and from the publicity standpoint, it's sure a lot easier for your life, for my life, if a guy came in and he really had a good athletic background that you could talk about. We had a situation up here once, back when I was working for Sam, this would have been 74, 75, a local newspaper really blasted wrestling, just buried us. And luckily enough, I knew one of the editors there, and they let me have a guest column where I came back with it, and I started naming some of the things that different wrestlers had done athletically, including, by the way, a gentleman by the name of Jim Raschke, a little Jimmy Raschke from Omaha, Nebraska. But naming off a lot of the guys and the athletic accomplishments they'd had. So it really made a difference. And when I put that out there, Paul Bosch, of all people, the promoter in Houston, Texas, immediately called up the office. It was the first time I met Paul Bosch. And he said, hey, I just wanted to talk to the guy that wrote and gave them an answer that really made sense. So my point is, I think a young guy getting into it, if he's a good athlete, if he's got an athletic background, you sure make the promoter's life a lot easier when he tries to market you.
Oh, I totally agree. I think in any sport that people are paying big money to, the athletes have to be on a higher level than all the marks that are buying tickets to see them. And it used to be like that in wrestling. You know, they would look up to and aspire to being like those guys when they grew up, or, you know, if they paid their dues and worked hard and all that other. But nowadays, I'm not trying to denigrate the superstars that are out there today, but all too often I see guys in there that don't look like they could, you know, beat up your kid's sister type thing, you know, and they don't look like they have any perceptible wrestling ability, and they maybe go out and do a few high spots and wear a weird costume and pretend they're something, but I think that's part of the problem, you know. And I know when I was a kid, you know, almost every wrestler my dad had, and I'm sure it was the same with the guys that Vern had and Sam Muchnick and all, almost every guy on that card, when you saw them, you, if you were a fan, you perceived them to be tough and looked up to them like they were on a higher level than most everyone else. And I think that's a big part of it. I know you go to any sport, you go to a baseball or football, and you expect to see those guys, you know, playing on a higher level than most everyone else. And I think that's one of the things that wrestling needs to revisit, you know. And too many of the guys that are coming in today, they know everything but wrestling. You know, they got all the high spots, and they got, you know, costumes, and they cut promos and all the other, but the wrestling is almost secondary to everything else, which is the exact opposite of what it really should be. You know, wrestling should be your meat and potatoes, and that should be your primary thing. And then after that, you know, all the other stuff can enhance and complement the wrestling. But if you can't wrestle, then I don't think you belong out there, you know. And so we should mention that to Vince and the, you know, the cast of clowns that he's got masquerading as bookers and storyline writers and whatever else down there, you know.
Didn't we really give a little credit, and try again, you can speak on this, and then the Baron can too, because certainly because he knows him. Jerry Briscoe's out there doing a lot of searching and recruiting and scouting now to get some younger guys to come into WWE, and I think one of the things that you find out from Jerry is quite often he's looking for college wrestlers. He's looking for guys who have that background. Isn't that what Jerry's really doing now?
He is. I mean, he recruits almost entirely from the amateur wrestling ranks. And you know, he's looking for he goes to the D2 Nationals. He goes to all levels, you know, looking for one guy that has personality, but still competing at one of the higher levels of amateur wrestling. I mean, that's basically all he does. So, yeah.
One of the frustrating things I found with Vince and his treatment of amateur wrestlers is he's all too often scouting these guys who are pretty good amateur backgrounds, and then he doesn't let them use any of their... I remember they sent some guy up here a couple of years ago who was nationally ranked amateur, and I think he's from Ohio State, named D4, Derek Ford or something like that, and they had almost deprogrammed him. They told him they didn't want him doing any amateur wrestling, and, you know, he was supposed to play some contrived gimmick, and I've seen and noticed that several times with some of the supposed amateur prospects. In my estimation, they didn't even really get great mileage out of Kurt Angle. You know, you got a guy who's, you know, a legitimate Olympic gold medalist and all like that, and they had him playing all kinds of, bullshit roles and all like that, you know, and I never found they really focused on his amateur, you know, and he had other guys like Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas, and, you know, if they weren't announcing it, you wouldn't even know that they had any amateur backgrounds, you know, which is reprehensible, but that's part of their problem down there. They don't even seem to have the ability to convert guys with legitimate amateur pedigrees into good pros, you know. That was one of the things I think Sam did a great job and Vern Gagne did a great job of. They would take these guys like the Baron and Brad Rheingans and Chris Taylor and guys like that, and they would emphasize their amateur backgrounds, and they'd have them doing suplexes and, you know, that kind of thing. At least there was, a lot of amateur focus on it. And, you know, I'm sure the other guys have seen the same, where you see some of these guys with, you know, incredible amateur pedigrees and they're doing no amateur wrestling. They, you know, have them doing, you know, all this contrived working stuff, and it's kind of a desecration of what they are, in my estimation. But I'd love to hear some of the Baron's perspective or Larry's or whatever.
I was thinking the Baron's, because I know the Baron came in through Vern Gagne. Yeah, Baron, tell us about your background. I know a little bit about it. How'd you become amateur wrestling to professional wrestling? How'd it all happen?
Just bad luck.
Well, aside from the bad luck, after some of the stories, though, when you were working.
Well, let me tell a story here. Well, I just been on my second world team. I was on the world team the year before the Olympics, and I was on the world team the year after the Olympics, and I made the Olympic team, but I got hurt, so I didn't go. Oh, I'm almost over that yet now. Almost.
That was 72?
No, that was... That was back in 63, 64, and 65. 64 Olympics.
Oh,
well. That was
Tokyo.
Yeah, I am. Muhammad Ali was there. Anyway, not as a wrestler. Anyway, I was in the Army during those years, too, and I got out to teach school in my hometown, Omaha. I was a school teacher, and I thought, gee, there must be a better way to make more money or whatever. I up until I was a school teacher, I'd never made over $1,200 a year. I was a private in the Army. I made, it was $900 or something, $1,200, but whatever. Anyway, I got out of school, and when I was in the Army, I was working out, and I popped a knee, and they did an operation on me. I was stationed in New York City. I used to train at the New York AC, and somehow they got me over to the Navy Hospital in Brooklyn, and I woke up the next day next to a guy that was a submariner in the Navy, and he and I got to be real good buddies. He was a big wrestling fan, and every Saturday he'd drag me down to watch pro wrestling, because up to that time I hadn't paid that much attention to it. I knew who a few of the names were and this, that, and the other. It was on TV in Omaha. So anyway... His name was John Cunningham, and And I said, well, maybe I'll write to the guy in Omaha, Joe Dusick, and see if maybe I could try to be a pro wrestler. Well, he wrote me back a nice letter. I sent him all my qualifications. I'm sure the boys in the locker room had a good laugh when they showed them to everybody. Anyway, he wrote me back a nice letter, and he says, well, I don't have any way to train you. He was quite old by that time. He said, but Vern Gagne comes down and with the TV show we do here, and I can introduce you to him, and he could probably train you. So I thought, oh, that's nice. But then I got a job teaching school, meanwhile, because I'd applied and they hired me. And so I taught school for the next year after I got out of the Army. And I also made the second world team that year. And after that was over, I decided to contact Joe Dusick, and he called Vern Gagne, and Vern Gagne met me at the TV studio and said, come up to Minnesota and we'll see what you got. And so I bought my little brother's car because the one I had cost $50. It had three different colored fenders, and I don't think it would have made Minnesota, but I drove my brother's car up there, and I met Vern Gagne and Wally Carbo at the office, and they were nice enough to break me into pro wrestling and teach me the basics, and they started me at the bottom. I was a ring man. I carried the ring around, set it up. Are you guys gone?
Oh, I'm awake. Okay, I'm with you. No,
are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone.
Anyway, I started as a ring man and a referee. Finally, I got to wrestle a few matches. And by the way, Wilbur Schneider came up and worked out with me a couple of times during that time.
Huh.
Anyway, I started wrestling, and a guy named Maurice Mad Dog Vachon saw me hiding in the studio, watching the matches like I was supposed to do, out of everybody's way. And he looked at me and he said, you'd make a good German. And after a few weeks of him saying that, I finally met him, talked to him, and he asked me to be his partner up in Montreal, Canada, where he's going back home for a while, and so I did. Took my lovely bride. We've just been married for about 3.5 hours. No, about 2 months, 3 months.
And you're still married, which is great.
Yeah, we've been happily married for 5 years.
That's good.
Out of 47, that's not too bad.
That's pretty darn good.
Yeah. So anyway, that's how I started, and then Vern Gagne taught me all the basics, and that is to wrestle and tell the story. And then Mad Dog taught me all the other side of that is how to wrestle and still get heat and always off the wrestling, always off the wrestling, always off the wrestling. You know, you don't go out and do a high spot and then you do another high spot and do another high spot and expect to get heat. All you're doing is high spots. And the crowd never gets down, they never get up. If you can make them cry, you can make them laugh. If you can make them laugh, you can make them cry. And that's what we did. We made them laugh and cry and whatever we needed to. But when they left the building, they believed and they had a big, big feeling of catharsis. That's what Shakespeare was after, and so were we. The end.
Troy, there's your guy right there. Wouldn't he be great training your guys on a regular basis?
Yes, absolutely. We need that.
Yeah, that's what they need. They don't understand it. They don't understand that. If you can make them laugh, you can make them cry.
I think you talked about earlier about being heels and faces. I think, don't you guys agree that if you can get people to care about you, it doesn't matter? I mean, that's the goal is, you know, we try to train young guys and, hey, get them to care about you for whatever the reason is, and then everything else comes pretty easy. But that's a difficult task for a lot of guys.
I tried for years to be a villain. It never worked out for me. I don't know.
We're at a show right now. We're just finishing up the main event. So it's been a great day.
Well, let me tell you, Sam had one story about noise and heels and faces. He says the only thing he knows is empty seats make no noise. So as long as they're making noise, there's somebody in the seat.
Yep, exactly. So.
Yeah, that's one of
them. That's the TNA.
Yeah.
Right.
That's basic.
Indeed. Real quick, if I could interrupt, because I know we have another caller who's been waiting for a while, but I in no way wanted to interrupt the Baron during his story, and that would be our old friend, Ballistic Brent. How are you?
How you guys doing? I'm doing all right.
Hey, Brent.
Yeah, thanks for coming on again.
Hi, Brent.
Hey,
how's it going, Baron?
Good.
Great.
I was
listening to you guys and I want to know from the Baron out, what's your take on how WWE is doing things today? We've heard from Bruce Hart and his perception. What's your perception on how they're doing things these days?
Is that to me?
This was directed to the Baron.
It's
very different, very, very different from what we used to do. When we were wrestling, when I was wrestling and very active, when I was active, we'd do television shows every week, maybe two or three different places. We'd work the shots every day, every night. Twice on Sundays, twice on Saturdays sometimes. Mm-hmm. And when we did the TV shows, those TV tapes showed in everybody's home and all around the communities that we were working in. And 90% of the time there was the mom and dad, the grandma and the grandpa, the aunts and uncles, the little kids, nieces and nephews and what have you, gathered around the TV. Everybody watched it. Everybody enjoyed it, had a good time, and they had a lot of respect for the wrestling. And nowadays, you don't see that because they've turned it into some kind of a X-rated, R-rated a thing where some of it is so stupid that I have to turn my back and not even watch it. Anyway, I wouldn't let my kids watch it, and they're 40 and 36 or whatever. it's just strange. It's different. It's strange. And I know they make a lot more money than we ever did, and God bless them for all that, and God bless all you too. But I don't understand it. I don't get it. It's just a lot of foof around. It's not the same at all. So
I totally agree, and it's feast or famine too. You know, there's a few guys making a lot more money than we did back in the day, but far fewer. And back in the day, there was a lot more guys making a living out of it and sowing the seeds at the grassroots and sustaining fans at the grassroots. And they're not doing any of that. You know, they maybe come to Calgary. I'm not sure if they go to Nebraska or wherever else, maybe once a year, if that, you know, and the fans are not even being able to indulge in it. And most of the guys I see out there, not to knock them, it's not their fault, but I don't even consider them wrestlers. They're kind of like one-trick ponies or puppets on a string that are doing what some script writer gave them, and half of them couldn't improv if their lives depended on it, you know, so... But yeah, I share the same perspectives just about the wrestling, and I don't even call it wrestling either. I don't know what the hell to call it. It's kind of a hodgepodge of scripted crap, you know. And but yeah, I totally share your perspective, Baron.
Yeah, it's just a strange thing now, and. It's too bad, you know. Maybe things will swing back the way they could be or should be.
I don't know whether the business, you know, is likely to survive at any respectable level, you know. But
yeah.
But you can't really fault the guys in it, because that's the only way they can earn a living if they want to try to be something even close to it. And they're doing the best they can. It's the guys who run the show. and call the shots. And as I was told a long time ago, if you have control of the television, you pretty much say what wrestling is going to be nowadays.
Yeah, tough part is I don't think they themselves know. That's the big problem, or the scary thing is.
Good point.
I know when I've been down there, I did WrestleMania a few years ago. I was taken aback at how much, it was like the Wizard of Oz or something like that. You know, there were, you know, 20 ass kissers.
Wizard of Oz set me off again. Go ahead,
yeah.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, go ahead.
How's background music? Go ahead. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I found that, I don't think they themselves know. You know, it's quite evident when you see Raw or SmackDown in any week, they'll do something that's they're wanting you to take seriously, you know, something with Brock Lesnar or Randy Orton or something. And then the next thing you know, they got Hornswoggle and El Burrito or something spanking each other, and then the Divas coming out and, engaging in some kind of softcore porn or some bullshit, you know, and then.
Who's got music playing?
I'm not sure if we're being bleeped out here or Vince McMahon's got somebody online, you know, bleeping us or something, but...
That's Vince McMahon's drone. It's Vince McMahon's drone.
Might be the ghost of Mae Young or something like that. I don't know.
Nice. Brent, any more questions for you, Brent?
No, I mean, I think that's the answer, and I'm honored to be on here with Bruce and the Baron and the rest of you guys. I do appreciate it, and hopefully you guys can have the Baron on again in the future. We can learn some more from him.
Oh, I'd love to. It's been an enlightening evening for me just hearing people like Larry and Baron. You know, I love just hearing the old stories and getting perspectives on things. I'm not sure what all that noise is.
I'm sorry.
That might be
the drone.
We're tearing down the ring, and that's me creating all that noise. I'm sorry. We're just our show's wrapping up here, so I walk a little
that's
further
okay.
away. That's me.
I thought it was, I didn't know what the heck. I thought it was some kids or somebody with babysitting or something like that.
No, they're tearing down the ring. So, I'll get as far away from that as possible. I don't want anything to be, I don't want to be involved in that anyway. That sounds like work.
Yeah, not a lot of problem. It adds a little authenticity to the show.
Yeah, right, there's a wrestling show going on in the background. Exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't get much more old school than that, I guess. You know, I just need a few guys screaming as they're being stretched in a dungeon or something like that, you know.
Thank God the show isn't just starting.
Right.
Yeah, somebody's got the claw hold on somebody or something, you know.
That seems like something each and every year when we do the Hall of Fame and Danny Hodges is there. And last year, I was walking out of the library of the Dan Gable Museum, and on the ground, with Danny Hodge, had a guy, flat on his stomach, and he was stretching him out, and he has a wrenched back, and it's so commonplace now after 6 years of being involved that I just step over them and go out into the museum. I don't even, it doesn't even really faze me. But Danny Hodges, they're stretching out some young kid, and the kid's like, and I'm like, I'll just step over him and go about my way. But, he's still a pretty legitimate guy. So
that's funny. I remember my dad used to regularly get these guys from Japan or from Europe or the States come up here and humbly ask him if he could stretch them, and my dad would usually put him in some kind of a torture hold and get a few screams out of them, and it was almost surrealistic, and then they would humbly thank you, Mr. Hart, or whatever, but So, yeah, same kind of thing. I think I remember my dad and Danny Hodge at Cauliflower Alley about 12, 13 years back, you know, discussing that. It's kind of funny to hear that, you know. It's almost sort of like a rite of passage to get stretched by Danny Hodge or one of those guys, you know. So.
Well, you remember, you know. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I can remember my Danny Hodge story is, back when I started out again with Sam, he came in to work some matches as a junior heavyweight champion. And Bill Longton was telling me the stories about Danny Hodge breaking the pliers barehanded. And we had an old pliers in the office that we used for some dumb thing. And by golly, Danny Hodge took that pliers and he broke that pliers right in front of me. So that was no work, my friend. Pop. Whoa, look at that. Nicest man in the world, too. Nicest guy in the world. Oh, yeah, well, okay, I just broke the pliers. You know, okay. Just think what he could have done with the claw.
Yeah, wow, hey now. That's from prior theory.
You know, you do know it's a scientific hold. It's not for everybody.
That's good.
Right. That's it.
A lot of finesse involved in that.
No, and I don't want to, you know, it put Baron on the spot, but what did bring you to the claw hold? I mean, what did make you think? Like, how did you decide on that as a finish?
I have to tell this story again.
Sorry.
Go see the movie when it gets finished.
When's that going to happen? I'd love to know that. Don't ask me.
I just made. Go to the spot they tell me to go, and they do what they want me to do. Anyway, it's in the final stage, whatever that meant.
Okay.
Yeah, it happened in St. Louis. I was wrestling Pat O'Connor, and he suggested that I use that hold, and he initiated me into that whole scene, and then.
Okay.
He even called Fritz von Erich. He called Fritz von Erich and got his permission that I could use it.
Is that true? That's not true, is it?
Yes, it is.
It is true.
Did he call Fritz? I mean, is that something that happened? Like he kind of.
Yes, because Fritz was over really, really big in St. Louis, as he was everywhere he went back in his heyday. But he turned to promotion, and he hadn't been to St. Louis for several years. And so Pat asked him, just a gentleman's agreement. And he said, yeah, so I use it. I suppose he might have wanted to take it back after his kids got up.
Too late.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, Pat said, we were in the ring and throes of a heated battle, and he said, put the claw on me, kid. So I said, what's that? I'd never even seen the claw. Anyway.
Oh, you hadn't, is that serious? You hadn't seen it?
I hadn't seen it, no.
Okay.
And I did it that night, then I didn't go back to St. Louis for a long, 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 long time, several years, and I went from, I was working for the Sheik in the Michigan Territory, Eddie Farhat, and then I went to Dallas, Texas, and I was working for Fritz von Erich, and he had the claw, and Don Jardine had the claw. So I didn't even think about the claw, especially with my son, you know. And then, I saw Pat when I went to the Indiana Territory where Bruiser and Schneider were in the office, and they were the office. Actually, it was a garage. They didn't have an office. It was Bruiser's garage. Everybody else worked for an office. I worked for a garage. Anyway, Pat O'Connor was in for the big show in Indianapolis, and he talked to Bruiser and said, Bruiser should have me do the claw. And so I started doing it, and it worked out pretty good for me.
I think
it did.
So anyway, and now you mentioned the movie. I've been on your son Carl about when the completion date is. So
you leave my boy alone.
I've been bothering him. I'm like, hey, I need this done.
I'd like to know too. That's all right. It's all right if you're on him. I don't care. he doesn't care either.
It's out of his hands too.
It's all in the editors and those people's hands. It's in the final,
well,
whatever it's called.
Yeah, final production. He says it's in post-production. You know, he says it's pretty well done.
Post-production,
so.
Yeah. So it should be done.
There you go.
Post-mortem. I made that
God.
Up.
Oh, man.
Anyway, it'll get done. He's good,
good
for it. It'll be good. I guess.
He's good for it.
No, the only reason I'm in it was because George Clooney wasn't available, so.
That's what he told me. That's what he said.
Yeah. Well, anyway. That's my story. I told it. I'm done. That's all the people need to know.
Hey, Patrick, listen. Patrick, you're still there.
Yes.
I'm gonna bail out here. I got some things I got to get done at this end. Since I've heard all the Baron's stories now, the ones that I haven't heard before. I don't think I heard any of those stories before, did I? But anyhow, listen, I'm looking forward to everything that's going to happen up in Iowa. Herb Simmons is going to be up there doing some representing for me because of my back situation, which the Baron knows about. But long story short, we won't worry about that right now. But it's a great moment, and I think it's something great for the wrestling world. And it's something that should be celebrated because it's a Hall of Fame. That means something. It's not a marketing ploy. It's not a merchandising gimmick. It's something that actually means something. And it's a heck of an honor to be given the award that Jim Melby has his name on it. Jim was a great guy, did a lot of work writing. And I'm just pleased and honored to be in that group, that category, where somebody thinks me that well. So I thank you all, and I congratulate all the winners. And I even congratulate Baron Von Raschke.
Thank you very
Baron,
much.
Are you there? Okay.
I'm there. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right.
I'll talk to you gentlemen later.
Yeah. Congratulations, Larry.
Hey, congratulations to you,
okay,
too, Larry.
And thank you so much. Okay.
And I hope you guys have a great weekend up there. It sounds like you're going to have a lot of fun and say hi to everyone for me.
Yep. And we get to hear the same stories from the same guys over and over every year. But it's good. It's good. It's good stuff.
And it appears also that something happened with Troy, too, because on my computer screen, at least, it shows that he dropped. So right now it is actually just you two gentlemen, although I'm talking with the chat going on here, and it looks like we may have a couple extra callers call in. But, you know, so obviously we wish both Larry and Troy well. I mean, if you gentlemen want to continue with your conversations and stories,
yeah,
by all means, go right ahead.
I'm fascinated, and I've really enjoyed hearing Baron's stories. You know, a lot of the names he mentions are guys that kind of came out of Calgary or had, you know, I've crossed paths with, including old Don Jardine, who he mentioned, and Fritz, you know, and I think Jardine, as Baron may have heard, was one of the recipients of one of the more notable Mabel parties in the history.
Oh yeah, yes.
Of the wrestling business.
I believe Paul Vachon was involved in that. It was.
I think Paul and Maurice and I think Stan Stasiak was part of that.
Yeah.
I was told, oddly enough, about like 10, 12 years after the fact that Jardine was down in Houston or whatever, and Stasiak came into the dressing room and made mention about the Mabel party with Jardine, and Jardine punched him out or something like that.
Oh,
he,
well.
He was still pissed off about it. You know, I think that was
Don
one
never
of the
did
more.
Don never did have a big sense of humor.
No,
yeah.
It was one of the more notable ones I heard about the Mabels. I'm not sure if they did those in other territories, but that seemed to be something that was indigenous to Calgary. They had, I think Stasiak had one done to him too, but I remember that seemed to be, when I was a little kid, that seemed to always be part of the subculture. There was those Mabel parties and the ribs or whatever, you know. So.
Yeah.
But So tell me, Baron, what are you doing these days? Are you where do you live in Minneapolis? Are you in the?
We live near Minneapolis, a small town near Minneapolis, and I'm retired, and I make a few appearances now and then, and I don't know. I'm always busy doing something.
That's good.
Yeah.
Any of Vern's old cronies still kicking around down there? Is Vern himself? I heard he might had been speculated that he might have Alzheimer's or something. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, he has Alzheimer's, and he's pretty bad right now. He's last I heard, and this is secondhand, that somebody talked to Greg, his son. And Greg said that he was going into hospice, so that didn't sound too good at all. So,
yeah, that's too bad. He,
I'll probably find out more at this convention than I will. You know.
Yeah, I always thought he, especially when you guys were breaking, I thought he ran a pretty good ship there. You know, he had, seemed to have. You know, guys like yourself and Taylor and Robinson and all those guys seemed like he had placed a lot of emphasis on what was perceived to be pretty legit wrestling, you know. And I always felt bad about what happened after, you know, Vince seemed to, you know, after they pulled the rug out with Hogan and Jesse and all the, you know, that sort of was, I guess, the death knell of Vern's territory, but that was always, I thought, one of the great territories in the business, you know. And Vern seemed to have a pretty, I think Wally maybe was an integral part of that. From what my dad said, he was pretty good businessman, you know.
If I may interrupt, I want to introduce, because we do have a new caller on the line, friend of the show. Ross Lern has actually joined us on. So, Ross, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good,
Ross.
Thanks. Nice to have you on.
Good to hear you again, Bruce. And I have to tell the Baron that I'm a huge fan. Luckily, up here in Canada, we get... AWA ESPN Classics. Yeah, so we get to watch the Baron every week.
You do.
Yeah. I saw Baron on last week with I can't remember if it was Crusher or one of those guys. You know, it was a lot better than the Raw that had preceded it. So.
Well,
was I wrestling Crusher?
I have to agree with you there.
Yeah. I think they call it classics, but I think it was you and back maybe in the 70s or 80s, something like that, you know, with, I thought it was Crusher, one of those guys, you know.
Yeah, it could have been. Crusher or Bruiser.
Yeah, it was good, though. You were in your heyday.
Yeah, those shows are coming out of the 80s when AWA signed that deal with ESPN.
Oh.
All those shows.
Yeah, it was good stuff. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, I thought it was good.
Great. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I don't remember that particular match.
Did you have any questions for the Baron or anything?
I was just going to say that one particular match that I saw on the AWA show was an older match with Baron against Vern Gagne. And you could tell that Vern was doing the commentary in the background. And you could tell that Vern was really respectful of your talent and just how good a worker you were in wrestling and your amateur background. It seemed like he really knew how to run a business.
Yeah, he told. I guess he told everybody but me.
Hopefully, his respect was reflected in your payoffs.
Yeah. Whoops.
He was in that match.
Really did a number on him.
He started me in the business. I respect Vern a lot. He was always pretty good to me. And, he was a good mentor, and he's a good promoter and boss, and a great worker in the ring. So I don't know.
Yeah, I know my dad back.
All
in
right,
those
I'll
days.
Let you guys.
Yeah, back in those days, Baron, my dad was always clamoring to get you up here. It never happened, but I remember he had guys like Billy Robinson, and some of those guys were always touting you to him. So he always had a thing about guys with amateur backgrounds, too, so he was always... let's get that damn rescue up here.
I met him once in St. Louis, and he asked me if I'd ever want to come up there. And at the time, I was I don't even remember where I was working, but I wasn't available. And then one thing happened, and another thing, and just never got around to it. So I'm sorry I missed that opportunity. A lot of guys love the area and love the whole promotion and all that stuff. So.
Yeah, I know he seemed to know.
You remember Crybaby Cannon?
Yeah.
George Cannon,
Big George, yeah.
Yeah.
I mentioned that other guy. He seemed to be a huge fan of yours. He was out of Colorado, a guy named Larry Lane, but he. Some other he said he had wrestled you, and he was always touting you. I think old Cosro was up here. He was. Vern had sent him up here, and he wasn't the greatest worker until the Ayatollah overthrew the sheet iron, the Shah or whatever the hell. But I remember he was always dropping your name as though he was an old buddy of yours, old Cosro.
I think he got to be a little better worker, but he was still. Talking.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would have ever heard of him, frankly, if they hadn't taken the hostages in Tehran.
Yeah.
But,
he bagged a few potatoes in his day.
He was... not a bad guy, old Cosro, but I don't think he ever really learned how to work. I think my dad had sent that other big... He's kind of the same big guy named Joe Perusovic, and they repackaged him as Nikolai Volkov down in WWE, and both of those guys were kind of, I think, had been in the dungeon for quite a bit, and neither one had really turned the world on its ear until world politics, sort of transcended them into something. But I remember those two sort of stuck out in my mind back in the day, but I remember my dad was always, clamoring to get you up here. It would have been nice if he had, but.
Yeah. Well, you can't do everything.
No.
Speaking of Smith, how's Smith doing?
He's not doing too bad, I think, he's always up to some kind of mischief, and I think he told me he saw you over in Japan, if I'm not mistaken, way back.
Yeah, I was on a trip, and he was over there training with the Japanese guys.
My dad sort of sent him over there, sort of like Duke Kiyomoka did with his kid. They were kind of getting into trouble and pissing them off. So. He was sort of sent over there as punishment or penance. But, I remember Smith came back to about somewhere in the 70s there, and he spoke extremely highly of you. I guess he said there was a few of Vern's guys over there when he was over there. He seemed to make a great impression on him. He was always, almost screaming at my dad, you should try to get Baron von Raschke up. He's the best heel in the business, and he's all like that. And but I think Vern was probably paying you more than Stu would have been able to at that time, and he's sort of already. My dad was usually breaking in guys who were on their way up, or sometimes he'd get some of those guys who were on their way down, like Killer Buddy Austin and Dr. Jerry Graham, and some of them that were had been sent packing or whatever. But yeah, I remember Smitty told me he had a good visit with you over in I think that was over in that the third office that was over there with Kimura and I can't remember Hamaguchi, some of those guys, you know.
So. Yeah.
But yeah, he made a great great impression on him. So I'll tell him.
Tell him I said hello. Yeah,
he'll be honored. He always one of your biggest fans.
Good, I guess. Anyway, I should be running along. I think I'm. I don't know. You got anything more for me that you want me to do, or?
Oh, I don't have anything, but I'd like to thank you for coming on. You know, it's great.
Well,
you know, I've heard so many nice things about you over the years. You know, and certainly lived up to it. You know, so it's a real pleasure to have finally had a chance to hook up with you, and appreciate your coming on, and I wish you well in everything you're doing. It's kind of an honor.
Yeah. Well, I wish you well, too, and I think, in wrestling, you always meet down the road. You meet the guys over and over, it seems like. But, yeah, so someday we'll meet.
Maybe CAC or something like that.
Are you
taking in the thing in Waterloo, Baron, or...
Yes, I'll be there.
Oh, that's good. I'll say hi to everyone for me. I hope you have a good time down there, and wish them all well. You know, the business needs a lot more guys like you and them. You know, that's what it's missing these days. So I hope that goes well. Hope you have a good time, and give my very best to all those guys.
Okay. I will, Bruce, and you have a great night, and God bless you, God bless your family, and take care.
You too,
and
likewise.
And all my fans. That is all you need to know. Bear Von Raschke, the Claw. All right.
Well, thanks very much, Baron. All the very best, and God bless.
Okay. You take care.
You
Bye-bye.
Too. Thank you.
Wow, it seems to be a kind of a rare thing that it's just you and I with over a half hour to go.
Is there any prevailing questions or issues, or maybe some callers seeking to offer their perspectives or whatever? But
surprisingly, no. it's kind of a surprising thing. It's no callers, but since this was kind of the idea going into early last week, was that it was around this point we were going to have Cue Ball Carmichael on, but unfortunately he's sick, so he won't be able to be on. But do you think maybe you could take a few moments and talk about that big seminar that you have coming up in North Carolina? I think it's going to be the easiest way probably for modern-day wrestling fans to know is that it's going to be the weekend of SummerSlam. I believe August 17th, 18th, 19th or something thereabouts.
Yeah, that's what I understand. You know, I never even got the exact dates from Cue Ball, but I'm supposed to be going down there and doing sort of an intense 3-day seminar, just kind of on wrestling, dungeon style stuff. So I'm told Cue Ball's got a bunch of guys that have enrolled, I guess, are coming in from all over the southeast United States, like Carolina and Florida and Georgia and Alabama and some of those areas. And so I'm looking forward to it. You know, I was actually hoping Q-Ball would be on tonight, give me a little bit of a lowdown on any of that. But I know he's told me he's got some really top-notch prospect coming in, and it should be a lot of fun. Something the business is in dire need of these days is some, it's like Baron and some of the other callers, Larry and them, were mentioning, you know, it seems to be fewer great workers out there than ever, which is why they seem to have to keep bringing back all these kind of retreads like Shawn Michaels and Mick Foley and even my brother Brett and The Rock and some of those guys. But so from what Q-Ball tells me, there's going to be some pretty interesting looking people coming in there. So I had a lot of people emailing and texting me and asking if it's just for people looking to break into the business, and I've kind of told them that, you know, I think a lot of the people that might be at the camp are people that have maybe already been in the business for a while but are looking to refine or polish their skills or, you know, kind of learn the business more, you know. And so I'm looking for kind of a wide range, you know, and I'd like to invite anyone that is interested to, most definitely check it out, and look forward to hearing from them.
Indeed, and actually, our friend Bob Johnson was nice enough to give me the proper dates, August 15th, 16th, and 17th in North Carolina, so I just wanted to make sure I got that out there.
Yeah, and Bob told me that you might be making it down, Patrick. I don't know if that was true or not, but he told me.
I don't know where he got that.
I got that impression, so I wasn't sure if that was just speculative or what, you know. But if such is the case, I look forward to actually meeting you in person. You know, I sort of feel like I know you now. You've been on the radio with me enough times, but I'm sort of as intrigued as anyone, you know, because I haven't officially met Q-Ball either, you know, so I'm looking forward to meeting a bunch of these people that I've come to know on the phone but haven't actually met, you know, in person. So I'm told there's supposed to be a number of them that have been on this show, you know, and including Johnny Mantell and, Kurt DeBoer and a few of these other people that have been on the radio, some of with you or, you know, on other shows. So I'm sort of eagerly anticipating meeting all these people that I've talked to but haven't actually seen in person yet. So, but yeah, if you do get down, Patrick, would be definitely look forward to sharing a cold one with you.
Well, we'll have to see about that. But real quick, we do actually have a caller. They're calling in from a 423 area code. If you could identify yourself and introduce yourself.
Yes, sir. Chris Gilman. I'm in Tennessee. And Bruce, it's been a while.
How are you, Chris? Nice to hear from you again. How's things down in Tennessee?
It's going great, and always a pleasure to speak with you as well.
Anything doing exciting with? I spoke to our old friend Jeff Jarrett. He was on our show a while back when we were doing a tribute to Owen. And how are things looking down there for the launch of that promotion with Jeff? And I hear Toby Keith's no longer involved, but there's some NASCAR guy or something like that. Or
I've heard of that. I'm not very certain, you know, I mean, as far as any specifics of that, but I have heard that as well. As far as I know, I mean, things are going great and definitely looking up. And I'm actually looking forward to the seminar next month in North Carolina as well.
I'd be delighted if you're able to. How far is it from, forgive my ignorance here, how far is it from Tennessee to Carolina? Is that a long drive or a fly there?
From where I live to Burke Hall, where the seminar is going to be located, is about a 5.5-hour drive, so really not all that bad.
No, it's not too bad by our standards up here, you know. It's sort of, you know, like driving across the street from some of the road trips we used to do up here from north to Alaska and all that kind of stuff, you know. So,
but, yeah, our friend Bob Johnson, we were actually talking earlier about several trips and across the prairies and things of that nature, so...
Yeah,
I
don't even exaggerate. I remember some of our road trips were 1,800 miles in one direction, you know. So,
yeah.
And quite often in the middle of winter, with snowstorms and all that other good stuff. So, you know, that sounds relatively humane down there. But anything else going on down there, Chris, in Tennessee? Is does old Lawler run any shows anymore? Is he strictly one of the, you know, smoke blowers in WWE now, or what's he doing these days?
I really don't keep in contact with Lawler. As far as I know, he is going to be doing some indie shows in the next little bit. So
he didn't get fired by Vince like everyone else, or is he just... doing that in anticipation of perhaps being unemployed soon or something.
You never know. Let's hope not, right?
if I may chime in, from what I heard, he just did a show like either last weekend or 2 weeks ago, where Scott Steiner, of all people, since we're talking about the Hall of Fame and Scott Steiner will be inducted. And from what I heard, it drew something like 1,500 people in a smaller venue. But from what I understand, it drew, and I guess they had at least decent match. So I guess Waller's still out there doing it.
I'm glad to hear that. You know, I would figure he'd probably still have some box office down there. He's been obviously on TV enough that, you know, his face is still in it, and he had a pretty good fan base behind him since the 70s. So he's probably as iconic a star as they've had in Tennessee in the last 30 years, I would have to think. You know, I can't think of too many bigger, maybe Jarrett or maybe a few of those others, but Lawler would have been. So I'm glad to hear that. You know, I think that's good for the business if he's doing a bit. And I'm hoping, I'd love to see Jeff Jarrett's thing get off the ground, you know. I think that's one of the things this business is in dire need of, you know, is these smaller indie promotions, you know, starting to get some traction and start doing well, you know. And biggest mistake I see almost all of them making is, you know, saddling themselves with all these washed up, old, burnt out retreads that, you know, used to be in WWE or whatever. If I was them, I'd be pushing the up and coming, you know, local talent, and I'd be trying to do more wrestling and trying to do less copying of all the contrived histrionics that I see all too often on Raw and SmackDown and maybe TNA, you know. But yeah, I'm hoping, Stephen, some of the initiatives, you know, that we've been advocating on this show, you know, enhance, you know, the revival of some of those, you know, small promotions, because that's really what this business needs. You know, it's really, you know, in dire straits at the grassroots level, and it needs to really re-sow the seeds at that level. And if Vince and Hunter and some of those guys, you know, had their act together, they would be aiding and abetting those people, not trying to suppress them, you know, and hopefully that might transpire in the next few years, you know, where they actually seek to help some of those promotions, like down in Tennessee or Ohio or North Carolina or wherever, you know, all they'd be doing is helping themselves, you know. And but anyway, what else is happening down in your neck of the woods,
well,
Chris?
Real quick, Chris and Bruce, sorry to interrupt once again. Actually, had another caller join us, and that would be Len Phillips, who obviously is also associated with kind of what you guys are talking about as well. So I just wanted to make sure I got him.
Yeah, Len's,
as well.
In case people don't know, he's a Native American movie star. You know, he's been making a lot of progress, from what I'm told, with some of the bigger wrestling names that have gone into the movie business. So nice to have you on board, Len. Are you on a movie set right now, or you just got back from one?
No, Bruce, I'm actually just at work right now. I just last weekend, actually, I did a it's called Zombie Number One, and I my part is the producer number one, actually, and it was a contest that was won by the it's called the Hive there, where the they each won the $10,000 so they could you know, do a production, and their production was Zombie Number One, and I got a part in that project, and it could very well turn out to be a series, so we'll see what happens with that.
Oh, that's good. I'm happy to hear that. How did your...
It's called Story Hive. That's the actual the name of the contest. Yes.
And how did your... last time I spoke to you, you were on set with some of the WWE guys doing a movie, I understood. So how did that go?
Yeah, no, that hasn't taken place yet. I'm still waiting. I'm actually doing my second trip to Hollywood here at the end of this month. I'm going to be going to a seminar with... the original wonderful Rock Riddle. He just had his birthday here yesterday.
Make
Mr.
sure you
Rock
say hi
there.
To him. Yeah, good
absolutely.
Guy, Rock.
So, you bet.
Yeah,
so I'm going down for... go ahead.
Yeah, and are you doing some movies after that, or are you just kind of negotiating?
Yeah, no, I'm just waiting to do the new movie, Naked Alien Massacre, which is going to be filmed there in Hollywood. I'm going to find out what's going on with that when I head down there. As well as I'm going to be, it looks like I'm getting some more work around the Calgary area with my agent, Faces of Wendy, fantastic agent. And the calls are starting to come in. So it's looking pretty good there, Bruce.
I'm happy to hear that. I look forward to seeing some of your work on the big screen, Len. And anything else new and exciting in your life, Len?
Well, I might be actually moving to Calgary here because, as you know, Bruce, the spotlight shines there in good old Calgary, Alberta. I reside in Edmonton, of course, right now, and it's the spotlight's not as bright there in Edmonton. So it's looking like Len Phillips is going to be moving south, right, to Calgary, Alberta. You bet.
Oh, that's good. I look forward to getting you out to the ring and, you know, putting you through your paces if you get a chance.
you bet. Yeah, it's been quite, you know, and of course they're doing a show here next month there with an indie show. Melissa Coates there, so I'm going to head down there and check out the show and see how it goes there.
Yeah, I hope they do well. I've sort of lost track of, you know, there's been a myriad of these different indie shows. Some of them are from what I heard, not bad, and some of them are, an abomination. So I guess that's about
the
same.
That's the business. Yeah, that's the business, Bruce.
Yeah, I hope they do well and do nothing to tarnish wrestling's image in the fans' eyes, at least, you know. So,
absolutely. Talking about image, I'm very impressed with the HBU website. I got a chance to take a look at that earlier, and it's quite impressive, Bruce. Congratulations on that, by the way, with all the workers at all the sweat and everything that went into that. That is awesome. That is
I certainly invite all the listeners to check that out. You know, it's like you said, I think it certainly, and I give a lot of kudos to Bob Johnson and Scott Galoop for having done that. You know, they did a terrific job getting that all set up. So that should enhance, get the word out. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to having you down here, Len, and have some of the trainees maybe benefit from some of your perspectives that you picked up from some of the Hollywood types, the Rock Riddles and others that you've had a chance to work with the last few months. You know, it should be invaluable to any up-and-coming wrestlers, just getting some perspectives on the rest, on the acting end of it, you know. So I'm looking
absolutely
forward to
it. Absolutely. That's where I started, Bruce, was, the great in the business of pro wrestling. Then it got me, of course, into the wonderful acting here. And, now the sky's the limit. You know, it's just looking bigger and better. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm glad to, there hasn't been enough emphasis, in my estimation, on some of the real Native American, honest to goodness Native Americans. So I know my dad always had a special place in his heart for them, and he had kind of pioneered people like Chief Thunderbird and original Chief Billy Two Rivers and Don Eagle and Chief Big Heart, some of those guys, all of whom were, legitimate Native Americans, not, make-believe ones like Chief J. Strongbow and some of that, So you would remember it because I guess you obviously grew up here, Len, but that was a big part of our fan base up here was the Native Americans in almost everywhere we went. There was always a lot of reservations and, Native Americans at the show. So it was a big part of our fan base up here. And I think same in the States, and I'd love to see a few more Native Americans really being showcased in the WWE. I can't recall the last legitimate one I've seen down there, been a long time, I'm not sure if Chavis, alias Tatanka, I think he was part Native, but the rest were like Chief J and, Billy White Wolf, alias General Adnan, and some of those guys, who are about as Native American as Adolf Hitler,
They put on the war paint and they could dance around the ring, but when it actually came down
sure
to
if they could
being
even
full
dance,
blood native,
I'm glad to see there's people like yourself sustaining, the legitimacy, and there's that other guy. He's a good friend of ours. I think you probably know him pretty well out of Hobima, that Morris Napoose.
Yes, Mr. AK Red Thunder, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he was just down not long ago with his son Clifford, who's a pretty renowned, dancer or something like that. But he was training in the ring here, and we had a pretty good session with him. And yeah, he had mentioned he had crossed paths with you. I'm not sure if it was in Hope Beam or if he went up to your neck of the woods up in Edmonton area or what, you know. But yeah, I'd love to see a lot more legitimate natives coming into the business, you know. There's certainly enough good athletes and people with all the tools, you know, in the native community. I'd love to see more of them actually being given a legitimate opportunity in pro wrestling, you know, because I think it would be good for the natives as well, you know. And so, yeah, if you spot anyone in your travels, Len, that, you know, looks like a candidate, make sure you let us know.
You betcha, yeah. You're looking for the next, sounds like to me, of course, Bruce, you're looking for the next native North American superstar, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think there's huge demand for it, you know, given what I was saying, you know, because there was some really great ones in the past, and it's been a long time when I think back on it now that it's been a long time since there has been one that really, you know, was in the same mold as the Chief Thunderbirds and, you know, some of those guys that were, you know, so, you know, outstanding back in the day, you know. So, and I've seen a lot of good native athletes out there. I think it's just a matter of, you know, having them maybe get in there. You know, closest thing I've seen in recent years, and I don't think he was bad, but I don't think he was in the league of the other guys, was Tatanka. You know, and I'm not sure what happened with him. He worked a few shows for us up here, as you know, and all like that. But I was never sure if he was even, you know, a real native either. You know, I hope he was, but I don't know. You know.
Yeah, Mr. Chris there. Yeah, I worked with Chris on a few shows, and a wonderful man, a great worker. He sure could work the crowd. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I don't know why he's... Yeah, I never could quite figure out why he was ushered out the door, or why he wasn't that old or out of shape or whatever, so I don't know why he seemed to disappear from the WWE. And I,
well, you know, Bruce, it was 2000 and what was that? 2012, I believe it was. There was a show there with an indie promotion. And actually, it was my first promotion that I booked there on my reserve, Northern Alberta, Kehewan Cree Nation. And we actually had Chris on there, as well as the late Nelson Fraser, a.k.a. Viseroff. And I tell you, Bruce, what a show that was. We didn't actually get going till about 9:30. If some of us got lost along the way, one of those
yeah.
nights, but we actually made it and got the ring set up and got the show going, and you know, the kids and everybody there from the community, they just loved it. It was such a wonderful time.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear, you know, that means so much to those fans, and that's one of the things I was saying earlier in the show that it's missing. Back in the old days, as you would know, when you'd see Stampede Wrestling or whatever, and we had some phenomenal guys that were legit superstars like Brett and Dynamite Kid and Davey Boy and Benoit and Owen and Pillman and Honky Tonk and Bad News, all of whom became big names in WWE. But those guys would go to all these small towns and you could see them in person, and, you know, it meant a lot to those fans if you were out in some place like Fort Chippewa or Buffalo Narrows or Hobima or, you know, Enoch or some place like that. And nowadays, you know, the closest you ever see is maybe those guys on TV or once a year if they happen to come out to Edmonton or Calgary or some such thing. But and I think that's part of the problem, you know. The old days, you'd actually go and see the stars in person and get your fix and all like that. And that's something the wrestling business needs to reestablish. You know, you need to have, and you would remember, Len, back in the day when Stampede was going, and there was legitimate superstars like Andre the Giant and Harley Race and Dory Funk, and they would be coming to those small towns and, you know, having world title matches and all that kind of thing. And I think the wrestling business needs more of that, you know. And I think the WWE, I'm not sure if they're even capable of, you know, kind of delivering that, but that's something that has been missing for far too long.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I even remember there back in 2010, Bruce, and listeners there, of course, I had the wonderful opportunity to work with the legendary Roddy Piper at the Reserve just out of Calgary, Soutinau. And talking about the fans and such, Mr. Piper actually stayed till about 1:30 in the morning signing autographs for the kids and the fans and pitchers. And that was just unbelievable, Bruce. You know, he lit up the whole the whole powwow ground, so to speak. It was unbelievable, you know.
Yeah, that's a testimony to what Roddy, you know, is, you know, and how much he loves the business and understands. You know, I did a similar one with Rowdy Roddy at I think it was up in Edmonton at Enoch or one of those places, and same kind of thing, you know, where he stayed for a good 2 hours after the show and obliged all the fans and was taking pictures and signing autographs and never once whining or complaining about you know, having to work overtime or anything, you know. Yeah, that made a great impression on me. It's too bad there's not more like Rowdy Roddy, you know. And I think Rowdy Roddy, his roots are Western Canadian, as some of the fans, I'm not sure if they know that or not, but he's actually originally out of Saskatoon. So, but
that's right.
Yeah,
Go ahead and finish your thought first.
Yeah, just saying Rowdy Roddy, and he respects the business, and it's something the business needs is more people like Rowdy Roddy.
Absolutely. I just want to say, before I go here, Larry and Mr. Baron Von Roski, it's I know they're on the show here tonight. It's these guys are legendary. It's just unbelievable to have these type of guests on the program tonight. I just wanted to add that as well.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better, Len. I'd like to you know, thank them. That was an honor and a privilege to have them on, and I'm delighted that they saw fit to stay on the show for as long as they did. And it was, you know, fascinating to hear all the stories and perspectives from people like that. So I'm looking forward to upcoming weeks. I'm told by Bob Johnson we have a number of other, you know, superstars and legends that are going to be joining us. So I'm looking
indeed
forward to that as well.
Real quick, since we are kind of running out of time, I want to get Chris. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
Mr. Phillips mentioned, I mean, definitely, you know, an honor to be, you know, on the same broadcast with Larry and Mr. Von Raschke. Bruce, it's always a pleasure, and looking forward to seeing you, officially meeting you next month.
Yeah, I'm looking eagerly forward to meeting you, Chris, down there in Carolina for that big seminar, and as I said before, if you come across any people down in Tennessee that you think are have some potential, tell them we'd love to see them at the seminar, and we'd love to help maybe expedite their rise to stardom. So if you see anybody that looks like they got some potential, make sure that they come down and join us.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And hopefully, you know, as you mentioned earlier, hopefully you have a chance to grab a beer or something with you as well. So.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'd love to, if you ever cross paths with Jared, I'm hoping he joins us down there too, Jeff. So I've been told he might be looking for talent too, so that might be something that some of these aspiring prospects, if they feel like they got anything to offer, might be a good opportunity for them to showcase their stuff. So, but I'll look forward to that then, Chris, and I appreciate your coming on again, and love to hear from you anytime. You know, you're always a welcome guest on this show.
I do appreciate that very much, so always a pleasure.
Well, thanks very much, my friend, and I guess we're running out of time here. They're giving me
well, it's recording, don't worry.
So, but yeah.
But, Chris, Chris, I will say thank you very much. Any last questions or anything?
No, sir. I do appreciate the time. Always an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Well, thanks very much, Chris. I'll look forward to the next time, and give my regards to the Jarretts and the Lawlers if you see them down there.
Will do. Absolutely. I do appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And, Len, any final words from you as we wrap up here on iTunes?
You betcha. Perfect. Yeah, it was an honor, of course, to be on the program again. Talking to legendary Bruce and, you know, having the listeners listen to some of these wonderful stories in this great pro wrestling business. I can't wait to be back on the program. You bet.
Oh, much appreciated, Len, and always a welcome guest, and keep us posted.
You bet you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
All right, now. That was Len Phillips as we're wrapping up here. And Bruce, any final words before I have to go into my spiel and thanking everybody?
No, I just like to once again thank all our guests. You know, I had a great time just hearing some of the stories about St. Louis and Minneapolis from Larry Matisic and Baron von Raschke and. Yeah, it was a great kind of trip down memory lane for me, so I enjoyed it, and I hope the listeners did as well. So.
Indeed, and like I said, we want to thank our guests. First off, Chris and Len for jumping in at last moment, along with Brent, who called in with his question, and our main three guests, Troy Peterson, Larry Matisic, and the legendary Baron von Raschke. And I've never heard a bad thing about Baron, and tonight kind of backed up all those claims of him being a real good guy.
Yeah, very much so. It's funny, as I said before, I've been around the business for 40 years or whatever, and it's funny, I never officially met Baron till tonight, but certainly more than lived up to all the nice things I had heard about him, you know, and the same with Larry Matisic, you know. I'm honored that both of them saw fit to come on, and I really loved hearing all the stories, you know, very, you know, kind of reflected their passion for the wrestling business, and I hope the listeners, you know, enjoyed their stories and all that other as much as I did. And once again, I'd like to thank you, Patrick. Just you did your usual stand-up job. Appreciate your living, putting up with us. So, and,
Unfortunately, I guess if you're putting it that way, I won't have to put up with you next week because with it being WWE Battleground, I will not be here. You'll have Will with you. But we will be back on the 27th of July, and that's going to be a big show as well. We'll be talking about New England pro wrestling and kind of the Northeast, and hopefully we'll be able to get around talking about WWE so much for those 2 hours.
Yeah, I actually sort of feel like I've had my batteries recharged, so I didn't have to talk about them tonight, so I I'll look forward to in 2 weeks then and to next week as well. But well, thanks very much, Patrick. I'll let you sign off, and all the best and God bless to all the listeners out there.
All right, indeed. Well, I'm going to be on for about a minute more just because I have to get through the thank yous. Real quick, some of the pages on Facebook that were nice enough to let us advertise. International Wrestling Fan Base run by Roy Lucier, the guys over at Classic Japanese Pro Wrestling, Jimmy Wheeler, and the Professional Wrestling Historical Society was nice enough to finally let me in with advertising there, and I want to make sure I plug their website, ProWrestlingHistoricalSociety.com, and then also Respect by Wrestling Forefathers. These are all kind of pages that are appreciative of the previous generations of wrestling, and they seem like a perfect fit for this show. And then, as always, want to get the plugs out there. Find you on Facebook, facebook.com/BruceHartHBU. And our show actually is up there as well, Heartbeat Radio, on ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, I think is the full name of the page. And then, as was mentioned earlier, the brand new website, it's Heart Bros University, so it's Heart, B-R-O-S, University.com. And then, as we mentioned before, in 2 weeks we'll have Tom Burke, Bobby Ocean, and Dick Blake all on to talk about the New England wrestling and what it meant to the history of pro wrestling. But until then, looks like I'm on about a two-week break here.
Well, you deserve it, Pat.
Indeed, and I want to thank you, Bruce, as always. And until the 27th, you've been listening to Heartbeat Radio on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse and on iTunes.com.
Adios.
With another edition of the Stampede Wrestling Show.